Three ridiculous men, one beautiful game. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I am joined this week by another all-new and different lineup. Not all different, because we recognize a very important member of the show, my fellow podcaster, fellow writer, fellow Canadian guy. I can't even get the order right. It's just so wild in here. Jamie Doyle. Jamie.
It's wild in here, but you can still recognize me through all the smoke and the craziness.
Listen, there are tigers in the back. There are lasers shooting all over the place. There was a big time Toronto radio celebrity in this studio right before us. I think we're still basking in his aura.
You're making it sound like it's Siegfried and Roy's basement in here or something.
I've never been in their basement, nor would I like to be.
You should.
Another man who, to the best of my knowledge, has never been in Siegfried and Roy's basement is our special guest host this week. As Grant continues wandering across India, we have enlisted a man who you likely recognize from CanadianSoccerNews.com, the It's Called Football show, his various trolling activities on Twitter under the name 24th Minute. He is the yin to Lord Bob's yang, the one and only Dwayne Rollins. Dwayne.
How are you, Daniel? It's nice to be here. The last time I was on this show, there was more beer involved, though, I recall.
Did this have anything to do with you spilling it in a playground while yelling grass to BMO?
I deny it all.
Well, denial notwithstanding, I am a respected journalist, and so when I say that Dwayne Rollins dropped and cracked some beer bottles in a children's playground with children there while shouting grass to BMO at 1 p.m. on a weekday, people can take that to the bank.
Yeah, that's a horrible lesson for kids.
Yes,
they should respect their beer bottles more than to break them.
Yeah, Dwayne was actually stealing the beer from a child on the swing set.
And actually, you mentioned Grant wandering around India. He sent us an email yesterday, and I think our listeners might want a little bit of an update of what Grant's getting up to. And it said something to the effect of...
I've actually got it cut and pasted.
Do you? Oh, okay. Yeah. Read that out then.
I think I'm obligated by the CRTC to cut out the profanity, which pains me immensely. But this is an email from Grant. You know those cartoons with a guy in a turban playing a flute to mesmerize a cobra in a basket? I actually paid a guy $2 to do exactly that. It was awesome.
There we go.
So if anyone's wondering, that's what Grant's up to. But Grant is off in India. Dwayne is with us in the studio right here. So Dwayne.
I have a cobra.
I don't want to see your cobra.
Luckily for everyone, I brought my flute.
I don't want to see your flute. What phallic object will I come up with? None, because this is a serious show. We're going to discuss serious topics like MLS preseason rambling. We're also going to speak to Canadian men's national team defender David Edgar, and certainly won't make any cheap jokes during that interview.
No.
And in promotion relegation, we will hit on such topics as, I wrote it down in my talking points. Wrong talking point. Handshakes, haters gonna hate, and snakes in a basket. Of course, we just did the snakes in a basket thing, so that one can just go straight to hell.
I've ruined all of your talking
points. You've ruined all of my talking points. We'll do Taste the Trivia at the end as well. You could win an Umbro prize, be part of the show,
We'll see if I ruin that before we get to it as well.
Dwayne is already looking at the clock, so maybe we'll hit on the serious topics here that I promised him when I asked him to come in and do the show here. Not really any big overarching talking points this week, so we're going to hit on a few little stories that have come out and hit me in the throat, apparently, over the course of the past week or so. So right off the top, Dwayne, I'll turn this to you first because you were an MLS expert.
Yes.
And a Canadian soccer expert.
True.
And an expert about this particular player and man in question. Dwayne De Rosario, co-holder, Canadian men's national team, all-time leading scorer, MLS legend, gets his big contract extension with DC United. He's not, to my knowledge, officially a DP, but we can only imagine that. No? You're shaking your head no?
He's not a DP, no. It's the same sort of thing that Toronto was trying to do. DC has put their allocation together to give him something in the 700,000 range. I haven't seen the exact numbers yet, to be honest, but he is not a designated player. He is not a marquee player in MLS, which was always his thing. He wanted the respect of that designation. So,
but he seems happy from what he said so far.
I'd be happy if someone gave me almost $1 million a year to kick a ball around, too. But we'll see how it goes. D-Row, look, this isn't his first rodeo when it comes to trying to renegotiate contracts halfway through. It's about third time in his career he's done it. Now, the first couple times were pretty legitimate. He was coming off the MVP in the MLS Cup final one time and was making less than $100,000 a year. You know, you can understand that, but when you're making $500,000 a year and playing in your hometown and have all these additional marketing opportunities associated with that, you can criticize him. However, I, like many people in the Canadian soccer community, remain ambivalent about Devereaux. He is a very divisive character in the sense that you can see a yin and a yang with him. He's such a talented guy, and he can do a lot of different great things out there, but at the same time, I'm writing a check now in the air. You can't see it because we're on a television, but I just was.
He's actually holding a pencil and wearing sunglasses for some reason. I don't know if you thought this was, if we got the Bob McCown studio, but we we definitely do not. Jamie?
Yes.
Does the fact that Devereaux has what may be putting his mind at rest in terms of his club situation, does that mean anything for the Canadian team on the Canadian side of things?
I think the only way it means something is if he's happy, then that's good. And if he's not, then that's bad. I mean, he's that kind of guy. He's a pretty mercurial...
I'm that kind of guy, too.
Yeah, well, no.
I mean, being happy.
The Canadian Soccer Association, the Canadian national team, probably don't care if you're not happy. And it doesn't really matter if you aren't.
Well, they should.
No, but I mean, a happy Devereaux is a good thing for everyone because he's not necessarily the best influence at times. He's obviously, you know, he's a divisive figure, as Dwayne says. So if he's happy and he's you know, he's happy where he is, he's happy with the money he's making, and he's not trying to shake things up, then that just can't, that has to be good for everybody in every dressing room that he's in, whether it's the national team or for DC United, which we don't care about because it's not a Canadian team.
That's true. Although, you know, maybe when they finally build a new stadium, it'll be in Windsor or something.
It could be
a Canadian team.
Moncton.
Yes. You want grass to BMO, I want games to Moncton. We're not going to open that up. That's some very dangerous territory, especially with you in the room, Dwayne. Mm. Now, speaking of 30-something-year-old talismanic players who have at times played for a Canadian franchise, the Montreal Impact, Dwayne.
Tick-tock.
No, you can't. Remember what I said about the CRTC earlier? Soon-to-be 39-year-old Eddie Sabrango, formerly retired several times, will be returning, apparently, to the Montreal Impact this year. My question to you is why?
He was one of their most productive scorers down the stretch last year, you know, after he comes out of retirement. The Impact had, of course, a cluster-you-know-what of a season last year in the NASL. Even though they were tipped off the top of the year to be the team that was most likely to win that championship, they ended up not making the playoffs, which was kind of an accomplishment in that league. Sabrango is a talented goal scorer, and goal scoring is a very difficult commodity to find. The other reason is that the Impact only have two Canadians on their senior roster right now, and without him in there, he will make three. So that means that unless they bring a new one in, he is likely to spend the year. He's also a bit of an outreach, I think, to the fan base, who can point to this guy. That's a nice story, you know, a guy that immigrated to Canada and has become a Canadian since he came here, is a proud Montrealer in a lot of ways. He's played in Vancouver as well. You know, it's a nice story. It's a good little thing to hook onto. Whether he'll see a lot of action is hard to say, but, you know, he's a guy that scored at every level, so we'll see. Those who listen to me and read me a lot know my position on the ability of D2 players in North America converting their talents up to MLS. I know that I don't think that happens a lot, so I'm not confident that he will, but especially at his age. But it's a nice story, and it's hard to really crap on that story because it is a nice story.
Jamie?
Yep.
I'm going to ask you to crap on that story by taking part of what Dwayne just said, which is the suggestion that it's possible that this 39-year-old player is being brought along simply for the purposes of cynically reaching the Canadian quota that the Canadian MLS teams are obligated to hit. Now, we saw last year with Vancouver coming into MLS, keeping for the most part the bare minimum of Canadian players necessary. Philippe Davies never saw the field. Alain Rochette, technically, well, born in Canada, but a Swiss international. So if, you know, do you buy into the idea this is just a cynical move by Montreal? And if you believe that it is, does it matter to you?
I think it's definitely, there's a hint of that cynicism there. I mean, if a team that was linked strongly with getting Nicholas Anelka, if they're just like, well, we couldn't get him, so we'll get Eddie Sabrango, that doesn't quite follow. So it seems like the decision is made at least in some significant part for off-field reasons. And not that that's not, you know, valid in its own way and not necessary. I mean, the fans want to have players that they feel passionate about and love, and that's kind of important. But yeah, you don't like to see teams just fill the quota for the sake of it or because they have to. you kind of, I mean, obviously the point is to develop more Canadian talent and to get, you know, to raise the level of Canadian play. And if they're just kind of dropping in whatever out of retirement guy they have, you know, hanging around the stadium, that seems a bit cynical. And whether or not he's going to be able to step up, as Dwayne said, is really, it's, if he does, that would be one hell of a story.
Well,
but at 39 years old, to play at, now this is the highest level you're going to play at, to step in, you've already retired once, it seems pretty sketchy. But, I mean, I'm not even a Montreal fan, but I'd kind of love to see him do a respectable amount of scoring.
Given that the, you know, did hearing that and knowing they're going to play their season opener, the Big O, did it recall all those positive memories that I think, even, as you say, non-Impact fans have about the game against Santos Laguna, the first leg, not the second leg, in the CONCACAF Champions League a couple of years ago?
Yeah, you kind of want to see him to like pull that rabbit out of the hat again. That'd be nice.
Would it be wrong of me to say that I have positive memories of the second leg, too?
It wouldn't be wrong of you, Dwayne. It would just, you know, it would fulfill all of the stereotypes that people already have about you.
It would not be incorrect. It might just be petty of you.
You hate D2 players. You hate all cities that aren't Toronto. There's a number of other ones that we may be able to cycle through as we go along here. Oh, you also hate women.
I think you also perpetuated the one with the drunken screaming at children in the middle of the day, Squiz.
Yeah, but that's not me perpetuating a stereotype. That is me recalling what I find is a humorous incident, such as the other one that, you know, is well traveled, which involves Dwayne finding a bottle of Jägermeister on the steps of a church.
You were there.
I know I was there.
You were
That's
and you partook. So.
I assume that's because Squiz was just leaving confession.
Yes.
At 1:30 a.m. What I was confessing for is not the subject matter of this show, but it was raining, man. That was diagonal rain, and you saw that from 50 yards.
Eye of the tiger, man.
The two of you should not be alive right now.
No.
And let's move on.
Well, mentioning tigers, Charlie Sheen is still alive, so I think the rest of us will make it okay. Another bit of a contentious topic that, well, you know, will be contentious this year and is contentious every year and is contentious in every league is the issue of officiating. Now, Dwayne, you wrote about this on Canadian Soccer News last week, the fact that Major League Soccer is supposedly going to crack down on reckless and dangerous tackles this year. Is this something that can actually work? I would posit that in a league like MLS, where you do have a wide talent gap in a lot of places, you're just naturally going to have tackles that are going to be mistimed, poorly timed, and injuries are unfortunately inevitably going to result. You look at the Women's Olympic qualifying tournament in January, the tackle from the Dominican player that injured American Allie Krieger. I don't think there was malice there. I just think that it was about the talent gap. I'm not saying that the talent gap in MLS is as great as it is in the CONCACAF women's game, but is there any merit to that? Is this something that MLS can actually address this season, or are these kind of bad tackles just unfortunately a byproduct of the game?
Well, the modern
answer
game,
that in three words, please.
In three words. No. The modern game sort of eliminates a lot of the more aggressive tackles that I grew up learning. That was the only skill I had, was to dive in recklessly. So it's a good thing I don't play in MLS for a lot of different reasons. But at any rate, the thing that's interesting about MLS's announcement, insofar as it's a show me, don't tell me kind of thing, as an aside, but is that they suggested that they were going to use supplementary discipline after the fact, so through using the replays and other evidence to, even if the referee missed the call on the pitch, that they would then come forth and give a red card retroactively. I think that's interesting. You see it, you see it in major leagues already, where they're doing that to Balotelli recently for his stomp against Spurs. There's a lot of different examples of that. But
there's another Rollins stereotype. Poor victimized Manchester City.
Well, we can talk about that later, and I could talk for 6 hours if you'd like about City. But
no, I wouldn't like.
Okay, some Canadian guy talking about City rambling. Anyway, if they are eliminating dangerous play, then of course you can't criticize that. At the risk of sounding like an embittered 75-year-old British man, I do wish they'd allow a little bit more tackling in the modern game, but it is what it is, and if you got to have it consistent, then at least have that ability to look at things after the fact, because God knows MLS referees, and I'm sitting beside a referee here, so I'm not going to criticize them too much.
Say what you want, man. Truth is free.
Consistency is an issue within Major League Soccer's refereeing
pool. Consistency is an issue within every league, everywhere in the world, at every level. Jamie?
Mm-hmm.
Is this something, Dwayne brings up the issue of consistency and, well, first I'm going to ask, did he sound like an embittered 75-year-old British man?
Like his voice or the words that he was saying?
Yeah, any part of it.
No, not so much. I mean, everyone likes a good, clean, hard tackle.
A good, hearty, meaty challenge?
Yeah, a lusty challenge, as they say, for no good reason.
There is no good reason to that. But, I mean, is this something that MLS can actually address? I mean, fans complain about the level of officiating and the amount of consistency, but is this just going to be the case in any league, in any sport in the world where, fans sitting on their couch with, their arms halfway into a bag of chips or, in the stadium with their lungs full of beer, making judgments about officials, highly trained officials who have to make these decisions in real time, split second, mm-hmm. griping about it. I mean, is that just a natural byproduct of any sport? Or is this something MLS can actually change and address?
I think MLS can change it, but I mean, I worry about how far they might want to go in making this showing how serious they are about this, because you could easily say if the ref sees X, then yellow card or right away. I mean, and we've seen it a little bit in the English league where, I mean, if you go in 2 feet, no matter what happens, it's a card. But the problem
is
what
don't,
happens.
Don't mention that to Dwayne.
But the problem is what happens to the game there. I mean, if all these guys are diving in as they do, and they get yellow carded every time for it or whatever the. You wonder if tackling just kind of evaporates out of MLS altogether.
What about the idea of retroactive discipline as Dane Rollins. Dwayne Rollins just mentioned.
That seems like a weird one, how players would react to that. Because, I mean, something like a stomp, you kind of know you've done it, and eventually, something's going to come down. You can't get away with that. But, I mean, a bad challenge that eventually comes back to haunt you, even if the ref doesn't see it or doesn't think it's worthy of a foul or whatever. I don't know how that will affect the minds of a defender who if they think that Big Brother is watching even beyond just the ref, and how that's going to affect the actual play on the field. It'll be a weird one to watch if that's the way they go.
Is this just a matter of the level of play, the speed of play, the quality of the players in the league developing at a pace that the level of referee development in USSF and in Canada can't possibly match at this point? I mean, is it just a matter of the players in the league advancing more quickly than the U.S. and Canada have been able to churn out referees?
I think there's a bit of that to that. I mean, if you look at the overall pyramid, for lack of a better way to put it, there's just not the same footprint you'd find in other more developed soccer nations, right? Mm. So you're not getting as many referees going through the system. You're sort of picking from a smaller player pool. I know that on my other podcast, on my podcast, it's called Football.
You're allowed to mention it.
It's... Yes. Ben Knight has advocated for the possibility of MLS bringing in referees from other jurisdictions to try and bring the standard of play up, to have the younger referees within North America learn off them. It's not something that's typically done, but it's an interesting idea just to spitball something out there. But to answer your question bluntly, no, I don't think the refereeing level is up at the same is developing at the same pace that the player development is.
So, Jamie, you talked about Montreal looking around and saying, what strikers are available, and just kind of grabbing them. What if the MLS looks around at sort of retired referees and just like plucks Pierluigi Collina and throws him in the middle of the next Sounders Timbers game?
I was going to say almost the exact same thing.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry then.
I mean, no, that's fine.
Stole my Grant Snake thing.
I did. That sounds weird.
Oh, there's my phallic reference.
There you go. It is an interesting point, and it would be interesting to see. I mean, because you can pipe in players like Thierry Henry and Robbie Keane from the highest levels of Europe. But you're not piping in refs, and obviously they're not going to be able to keep up. I think it would be interesting, especially if it's Pierluigi Collina, because everybody kind of loves him.
They piped in Henri from the highest levels of Europe and then piped him back out to Arsenal.
All right. Dang. Come on.
Moving on to a bit of a different topic. Quickly, we'd be remiss not to mention this, and I'm not going to turn this one to Dwayne first because, as we said, that it falls into one of his stereotypes. Canadian women's national team is in Cyprus right now, Jamie. They are preparing for the Cyprus Cup. Bit of a strange little tournament. It's usually played literally in front of 15 to 100 people in the stands. Bit of a not a warm-up tournament, but it's going on 5 years. Canada's won it 3 out of the 4 times that it's been played. They're in a group. The tournament is set up in such a way that it looks likely that the final of this tournament will be Canada versus France. It could turn out different ways, but it looks as though that's the way it may turn out right now. As a fan, you know, obviously we say Canada, France. You think of the Women's World Cup last year and the
demolition. You don't know what I think.
No, I don't, apparently.
You're right, though.
Except for the Kalina thing. You know, we think about that demolition at the hands of the French team last summer at the Women's World Cup. Do you like the idea that on the road to the Olympics, which should, you know, be a bit of hopefully a redemptive tournament for the women's national team, would it be good for them to get back at a team like France not that long after that demolition to see where they're at this point?
Yeah, I think this is a good way of battling back those demons that have to be kind of lingering still in the back of the minds of the players who were there for the World Cup. And the problem with the Canadian women's team seems to be that they can demolish CONCACAF, they can make it to all these tournaments, but when they get there, the level of competition is so much higher and they just fall to pieces. And so the more games they get against that level of competition before they actually get to the tournaments that matter, not that Cyprus doesn't matter, but it doesn't, the better. And the more the better, really. And it would do them, you know, no end of psychological good, I think. And obviously the, you know, the typical warm-up kind of tournament physical good for the game.
Dwayne, you said the Cyprus Cup doesn't matter?
Well, I mean, it matters in the same way that any exhibition tournament would matter, in the sense that you want to win, you'd rather win than lose. But in terms of the grand scheme of the world, there's not going to be a parade in Dundas Square if they win the Cyprus Cup. I mean, they've already won it. We've seen what happens. It's nice for the day. No, to speak to your question directly, is it good for them to be playing France? Of course it is. The problem, I think, in the World Cup lead-up, well, there were a lot of problems, but to pinpoint one was their lack of preparation against truly quality sides. We had a false sort of reality of how good the team was. There is, within women's football, there's three tiers, really. There's the first tier, which are, you know, Japan, there's the United States, there's Germany, there's those teams that are right up there that are in the running to win these major championships.
Would you put Brazil in that group?
Yeah, on a good day. They're sort of the last team of that group, I think, but on a good day, they're sort of there. Then there's a bit of a gap, and then you have that next tier, and I think France is the top of that next tier, and Canada's kind of right behind. So you need to sort of play games against that equal competition to try and get yourself so you can rise up and compete. As we saw with the final of the Olympic qualifying, Canada's a long ways away from the United States right now. They still panic at the back and the ball. They revert back to their sort of booted up and hope kind of tactics. It's not even tactics. It's panic, and it makes sense because that's just their instincts revert to that. You could see it even in the prelim games, and when Costa Rica kind of was coming at them a little bit, they were panicking at the back, and I sort of made a mental note of myself at the time that it might be ugly on Sunday, Sunday meaning the final. This team needs to develop more. They need to look at the Olympics itself as a stepping stone to 2015. They're not going to medal in London. The idea that they're going to medal in London is, I don't want to say absurd, but it is an exceptional long shot, and I think fans need to wrap their head around that. The team, to a certain extent, needs to wrap their head around that and use it as a building block to get them to the point that they can compete for a medal in 2015, because that would be the true measuring point that this program needs to be working towards.
No less a figure than Canadian women's national team head coach John Herdman has come out, though, and said that, you know, whether or not this is something that the coach kind of needs to say, has said that going for a medal at London is something that they are realistically shooting for. It's a 12-team tournament. You know, stranger things have happened. I mean, then again, we went into the World Cup last year with high expectations. Dwayne, you mentioned about having these games against these high-level opponents. The women's team does play a friendly next month against Brazil in Foxborough, Massachusetts, which is not Moncton. And the CSA has said that there will be an Olympic send-off match that will hopefully take place on Canadian soil. So hopefully they will have some chances to get the kinks out and everything before the actual big show gets going in London. The biggest show going on in London, of course. It was all working up to a very smooth segue.
Go, yeah.
The biggest show usually going on in London and other sites throughout England, and now Wales as well, is the English League. They play soccer. They're out of hell with it. I'm moving on to the interview. Up next, interview with David Edgar, defender for the Canadian men's national team, and Burnley FC, right after this. Joining us now on the line from Burnley, England, defender for Burnley FC and the Canadian men's national team, David Edgar. David, welcome to the Some Canadian Guys show.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, good. We hope everything's going well for you as well. Going to start off, of course, you got a little bit of good news for the upcoming week. You'll be with the Canadian men's national team next week when they play a friendly against Armenia in Cyprus. It's taken a few years, but it seems now over the course of the past year or so that you've become a regular fixture for the Canadian team. How does that feel knowing that you're now a regular part of the men's national team setup?
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I've always said in the past that that was my main goal, is to be a regular in the national team and also wherever I play my club team football. So it's been a good year for me and a good season.
The Canadian national team, of course, has struggled over the years to get results, particularly in Central America and elsewhere on the road as well. It's always been a curiosity of mine of to get the perception of players of why is it so difficult to win against countries in Central America when you're down there. Could you just sort of spell it out to those who've never experienced it, with the challenges that a national team player would face going down there?
Well, to be fair, I haven't really experienced too many games in men's national team games in South America as of yet. But I know going as a junior and around the 20s and 17s, it's a difficult place. The conditions are difficult. Stuff that I'm used to, I mean, the facilities and things like that. And I guess that's one of the main things. But, I mean, we just need to adapt and to just play our game, really.
And the guys on the team, are they preparing the younger guys like you? I mean, the veterans are preparing you to face the baying hordes that are going to await you in countries like Panama?
Yeah, it's obviously those guys know a lot better, the more experienced players, the veterans. So they're definitely help us out and let us know what to expect and what to let us know what we're in for.
Now, one of those veterans, the all-time caps leader with the Canadian men's national team, Paul Stalteri, retired from the national team. And since then, there's been a bit of a question in the minds of Canadian fans as to who would fill that position at right back for the men's national team going forward. I mean, there have been a number of players who have been tried out at that position, yourself included, over the past year. But a lot of fans, I think, feel that you may be a potential long-term solution for the men's national team at that right back spot, even though you're currently playing, if I'm not mistaken, center back usually for your club. Would stepping into a right back position, if that's what you were called upon to do for the national team, be something that you would be comfortable with going forward?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would say that I'm a center half, but I have played right back and I played there, and I don't mind playing there. And at the end of the day, it's as long as I'm getting selected to play for the men's national team. It's an honor, and I'd play anywhere. I've said that before, and I just want to be involved. And if I can do a job there and help us qualify and become successful, then I mean, I'll be more than happy to do so.
David, looking at the round that just passed, of course, Canada qualified as expected fairly easily. There were a couple games where there was a little bit of struggle to break down teams that sort of sat back to get the producing going forward. I'm just wondering, in a general sense, what did the team learn by playing that last round of qualifiers?
Just, I think it's a lot of patience. I mean, sometimes we get we're too eager to go and score when we can be patient and keep the ball and get teams that we had a lot of possession against. And it was, don't get me wrong, those teams were very good and they've been difficult for us in difficult conditions. So I think we learn a lot about being patient and a lot about taking our chances when they come as well.
And you yourself got your first run with the senior national team. What do you feel that you personally learned?
It's a different type of game, international football. There's a lot of passing side to side, and it's more tactical. And I really, really enjoy playing our games. And I mean, I'm looking forward to hopefully getting some more games in my belt. But like I say, it's tactically a lot different to club football.
Now, in the past year or so, as we've said, you have really established yourself with the senior national team, and this also seems to be the season in which you've firmly established yourself as a regular member of the starting 11 for your club, Burnley. Is there anything that's changed or that you've been doing differently this year, or is it just a matter of you finally being recognized for the hard work that you've put in over the past few years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, obviously a new manager came in, and over the summer he cut the average age of the team down, and he gave him a chance at the back end of last season as well. And I just he put some faith in me, and obviously I made a few appearances here and there, left back, right back, center half, and he knew it was difficult. We had a conversation about locking one position down, and he believes in me playing in that center half role. And he gave me a lot of games, and I think with games comes confidence, and consistency is the main thing. And he put his faith in me, and hopefully I've repaid him with that.
You broke onto the scene with Newcastle, of course, and you scored a famous goal that was replayed over here on the television quite a bit. A lot of people got to know you through that. And then you sort of disappeared for a few years on the club scene and the national side of things. Just talk about how frustrating that period of your career was, and what you had to do to make sure that you got back.
Well, it was definitely very frustrating. Like I said, I was involved in and around the first team at Newcastle, and I think there was a lot of managerial changes and a lot of uncertainty at the club at the time. And I was in and out, and like I say, no consistency or in game time. And I wasn't able to get a chance on loan at Newcastle, and the opportunity came to Burnley. And it didn't happen here for whatever reason for the first year in the bit. And I just kept working hard, and training's all I had. I had the loan spell at Swansea, and proved I could play. And it was just a case of, like I say, getting a run of games and getting a manager who put his faith in me for a long spell. And that's what I got, and I'm grateful for that.
Now, as Dwayne just mentioned, you do have experience playing in the Premier League. Currently, Burnley is, if I'm not mistaken, 6 points out of playoff spot in the championship table. There are a number of teams between Burnley and one of those playoff spots at present, but I think it's safe to say that the team is still in the hunt for one of those playoff spots. How does it feel to be at this point in the season with a realistic shot that your team could be vying for one of those spots in the Premier League next season?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the main goal for every team in the championship. And we had a sort of a staggered start at the beginning of the season, dropping points with late goals that we shouldn't have really been conceding. And I think a lot of that came down to such a young squad with lacking a bit of experience. But as the season went on, we pushed some really, really fantastic results in tough places, especially our waveforms were very good. And like I said, we've sat. It was almost got to a point where it was frustrating because we went on a run of winning 7 in 9 games or something, but we didn't really move from 10th or 11th place, but still in the hunt. And that's how, just to show you how tight that is for those 6 playoff positions. And it's going to really come down the wire and who shows the most consistency and picks up the most points along the way.
Well, I think you'll know that most Canadian fans will definitely be behind you and want to see as many Canadians as we can get into the Premier League. And we've got one thing. Marcus Haber mentioned this to us, a fellow you're probably pretty familiar with, playing up in Scotland now. It was about a year ago, and we've asked to St. Ricketts about this as well. But Haber seems to approach life, he says, with a 5S system. And he describes these S's, all the things he needs to live, are soccer, sneakers, sushi, sleep, and sex.
Not necessarily in that order.
And probably not all at the same time. That wouldn't work. But if you had to add something to that list, and you don't have to comment on how you feel about any of the other things on the list, but if you had to add something to that list, what do you think it would be?
Does it have to be an S?
It doesn't have to be an S, no.
Probably my dogs. I mean, they give me my most company in the afternoon to drain me after training, so there's a lot of spare time in the footballers and so I'm talking to my dogs. So,
what kind of dogs are they?
I've got 2 English bulldogs, actually.
I was going to say if they were maybe schnauzers or shih tzus, they could work in the S system.
Like more substantial dogs than that.
Yeah. All right. Dogs. I think that's animal life, an important part of anybody's life. I think.
Yeah. For the record, to St. Ricketts went with
a lot of spare time, so I just like to show them up.
That's good. To St. Ricketts went with scoring, though, so you can see where his mind's at.
For an S, it could be TV series.
Okay.
Series. A good. What kind of TV series?
Oh, I'm into Criminal Minds in a minute.
I thought you were going to say Downton Abbey.
No, my mom was watching that when she was little. She loved that, but I couldn't get into it. It's too slow for me.
You professional players always at such a high pace. Now, when you do have time to chill out, this is another question we tend to ask players. What kind of music do you use either to relax or to kind of get you fueled and motivated before or after games? What are you listening to these days?
To be honest, I mean, I listen to all sorts of music. I mean, until all the R&B type stuff. And I think we've got like a playlist hanging before the game, which one of the English guys makes. It's a lot of English, like drum and bass, it's called. But that gets me going before the game. And I've always country music and country music. So I like that just to relax.
Are you big in the FIFA 12? And if so, do you play with yourself?
I've never been into games, to be honest. I mean, I got into Call of Duty Online with a bunch of teammates. It was good when everyone came online, but we just sort of stopped playing, so I haven't been on it.
Is that a thing, though, you've noticed with guys you play with, that they'll have a go at FIFA 12 and see how good they are in the game?
Yeah, like, you've been good players, so I think most of those tend to go for Barcelona or Man United or something like that, so...
I can imagine it would be frustrating if you're playing with yourself and the game version of you isn't what you think you are in real life.
Yeah, I think your perception and everyone's perception will differ to the people that make FIFA.
Yeah, and I imagine I just said you're playing with yourself, and that obviously everyone in the room here with me took that the wrong way. That's not what I intended.
Maybe that could be a new S for the list, self-playing.
All right,
like in FIFA 12.
Let's keep it clean.
Okay, no, that won't be your addition to the list, David. We'll stick with the much better submission you gave us earlier. That has been Canada and Burnley FC defender David Edgar. David, good luck this year, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks once again to David for that interview segment. As we go along, we are constantly adding to the 5S system. I think we're up to 7 S's now. We've kind of...
Well, it's still 5 S's and 2 other things.
Yeah.
2 other letters.
No, but there was scoring and then self-playing, you know?
But I remember Rickett said something and then I was like, hey, why not scoring? And then he just kind of agreed with me, so I'm not sure if that counts for his
He's agreeing with it. It's
good
enough.
6 S's and a D.
All right. At the end of the show, as always, we move into our regular segment, promotion relegation. Usually, I would ask each of these gentlemen what they would like to promote and what they would like to relegate. Going to do it a bit differently now. Dwayne Rollins is a very busy man, running behind schedule. So I'm going to ask you first, Dwayne, this week, who or what would you like to promote?
I would like to promote the fact that that Sportsnet, the very network that hosts this wonderful podcast, has decided to broadcast the Canada-Armenia friendly on the 29th of February,
which David Edgar will be taking part in.
Exactly. That's I like to do that segue kind of back and forth. I'm very effective at that.
I'm evidently not, as people heard before the interview, but go on.
Yes. Well, for years and years and years, those of us who have been in the community, the geeky community of Canadian soccer supporters over the years, have noticed, as we have moaned greatly over the lack of support broadcasting wise for the national teams. Over the last year, we have seen a change of that, a remarkable change of that. It started before this, I think, but especially during the Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament, where Sportsnet did a bang-up job. It did a first-rate job to promote that and to get the stories out there, to get people talking about that. It became a story that, frankly, was above what the actual tournament was in a lot of ways. I mean, we kind of knew what was going to happen if we're paying attention. But that aside, the fact that they've stepped up and have found a way to get this game on the air is incredible to me, and I think that Canadian soccer fans who are quick to complain should also be quick to compliment when something goes right. So I'd like to promote the fact that Sportsnet has this game on there, and to on behalf of the Canadian soccer community, because we all know that I speak for them all, thank them for their efforts to do that.
Dwayne, was that sarcasm?
No, I do speak for them all, especially those west of Kenora.
Oh, good God.
I'd just like to add the very tidy little disclaimer here that while we are broadcasting this on Sportsnet, Dwayne is not a paid employee of Sportsnet in any way, and we didn't threaten him in any physical kind of way that he has to promote Sportsnet before letting him on the podcast.
I was actually going to mention the fact that Jerry Dobson was standing over his shoulder just casually handing him $50 bills
exactly.
as that statement went along. But no,
Daddy's got to eat.
True enough. But, you know, you're right. Regardless of what building in which we happen to be recording this studio, the reality is more coverage of the game, the Canadian game, is a good thing. And Sportsnet seems to be stepping up. So
we all remember watching Canada play Macedonia or whatever on the most ridiculous choppy web feed in God knows what language. Probably Macedonian, I would imagine.
That would make the most sense.
Not that we speak that. So, yeah, anything that's on TV in whatever language is perfectly good. So hopefully Sportsnet will do it in English.
We'll what I will say, though, is, you know, while it is a good thing Sportsnet's covering these games, it is through going through these sort of weird avenues to follow the team that you do stumble upon some of the great moments in Canadian soccer history, a la Phillips Bakery.
Phillips Bakery.
There's the Iceland with the four simultaneous web feeds that were going on, and you have to switch between them.
Mm.
My favorite Canadian soccer moment, if you'll allow me, was the Cyprus friendly a few years back. We couldn't get any TV or radio in Canada, but what we did get is a 14-year-old kid from Cyprus that was listening to it on local radio there and posting updates on the Voyageurs webpage. That is my Canadian. That's the moment when I'm at the World Cup watching Canada play. That's going to be how I tell other long-term fans. I'm going to ask them about the Cyprus friendly, and if they can recall that story, they're part of the inner circle.
Dwayne, by the time Canada makes the World Cup, you're not going to be able to tell that story because the word radio won't make any sense to anybody.
Touche.
Now, Dwayne.
Yes.
As I said, we're going a bit off the board here because you're a busy man, so I'm going to ask you as well. What would you like to relegate?
Carlos Bleepin Tevez. And not for the reasons, well, for some of the reasons that people would expect. And those, disclaimer, I am a very long-time Manchester City supporter.
Get out of town.
Fanatically, some may say rationally, insanely, I don't know, whatever. If you follow me on Twitter on a City Day, you'll know what I'm talking about. Of course, Tevez came back to City this week and apologized. Well, first said that he was treated like a dog. And then, you know, Mancini said that, no, I treated you better than a dog. And there was sort of a back and forth there. And we all know the sad tale of this. The bottom line is that they've made up and supposedly they're going forward. But, of course, the British press, being what it is, has taken this is a crisis. And this is evidence that the city is going to be distracted and their title chances are being adversely affected by the presence of the pouting Argentine. Okay, guys, they're on pace for 91 points here. It'd be an historical season for them. They just finished beating Porto, a decent side in the Europa League, 6-1. Where have I heard that score before? Pause for effect. Over two legs, of course. And the truth is that nothing's going to derail this team's title chase. They may not win it. I'm not making a bold prediction. I think they will. But this team is incredibly talented. And Carlos Tevez, as insane as he is, the, you know, having the second ugliest striker in Manchester come back is not going to affect this team's title chase. So Blue Moon, et cetera, we'll we're on. It's rising, baby.
I just pictured Carlos Tevez with hair plugs now.
Mm. Yeah.
I think we've wrapped every Dwayne Rollins stereotype into that promotion relegation segment. I think before you go, I called you off the top the yin to Lord Bob's yang. If Ben Massey is listening, is there anything you'd like to tell him?
Hi, Ben. How you doing?
Terrific.
Yeah, Ben, he's been a little low-key. You need to get back to your crazy. Get off the pills, Ben, and get back to your crazy, because the Canadian soccer community needs a little crazy. Did I just slander Lord Bob?
Only if he's actually mentally unstable in a legitimate clinical kind of way, I think. Okay. Which I don't think is true.
I don't think you're crazy, Ben.
What, regardless, if you would like a dose of Canadian soccer crazy, be sure to follow Dwayne Rollins at the 24th minute on Twitter. Some of the things that you'll see there at about 1:30 a.m., they will blow your mind. You can also read what he has to write on CanadianSoccerNews.com. I suggest stopping by and leaving a negative comment. He responds very well to those.
Yes, I'm also at The Score, too. We should mention that as well.
Oh, yeah, the footy blog at The Score.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of different hats I wear.
Do you?
Because I'm bald.
Right.
So you have to wear hats.
Well, you're wearing a hat right now. It's like you're going to rob a bank.
Well, I was after. I'm a journalist.
Oh, that's what you're rushing to do. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I won't stop you from getting to that. I will thank you for joining us. And is there anything you wanted to promote, any of the hats or balls that you're juggling before you go?
I know. It's called football. We're going back to three times a week very soon when the season starts up. Canadian Soccer News we're working on the season preview right now. You know, it's a tough gig to get through an off season when you've been writing about it for 4 years, but we're refreshed, and I think that I believe that Toronto FC is on the right track for the first time in a long time, and there were points last year where I was beginning to question the sanity of any of us that showed up and supported that club day after day, and this is coming from a lifelong City supporter, so take that for what it will. I think it's going to be a good year, and I'm interested to see how Montreal does in MLS. I think that they've made some interesting moves, and I think they could be competitive. And Vancouver, with especially the addition of Latou and bringing in the DP from England, it's going to be an interesting year in Canadian soccer. Hopefully, it'll be tapped off by the ultimate cherry on top, which would be making it to the Hex finally. I'd love to be at the Hex one day, but we'll see. It's going to be a good year, and I'm looking forward to it. And less than 2 weeks to March 7th. That was a lot.
That was a lot. And you struck an unusually conciliatory note there, but I think that's good. That has been joining us as a special guest host, Dwayne Rollins, who's now going to pack up his things as we continue with promotion relegation. Thanks, Dwayne.
Cheers, boys. All right. Thanks, guys.
Oh, Jamie, let's keep this going, baby.
Am I not stopping this?
No, let's go, man.
All right, here we go.
This is No. This is real stuff. Jamie, who or what would you like to promote?
My promotion, I've got more of these, like, I could promote this one and relegate this one, or I could do it the other way around.
You're torn.
I am a little bit torn. I'm choosing to promote Italian Serie A club Lazio, just for kind of ridiculousness. I like to promote people for doing kind of crazy things. They've taken it upon themselves. Their manager, Eduardo Reja, has tried to resign for the second time this season. And they just won't. Oh, no, sorry, once last season. So, and then he's doing it again this season, and they just won't let him. They just refuse his resignation. The team isn't doing especially well. They got crushed by Palermo recently, 5-1, I think it was. And he's just kind of, he's had enough. It's not working. And he handed in his resignation, which was presumably then just balled up and thrown right back in his face. And they're just like, hey, you're going to be there for the Europa League fixture at Atletico. I just like that. It reminds me very much of the Seinfeld episode where George keeps trying to break up with his girlfriend, and she's just like, no, we're still going out together.
Well, why won't they let him go? Is there any mention of that?
No, I don't really know. Maybe it's like the manager whose name, his last name is Lolito, which is Lotito, sorry, is fantastic.
No, Lolito.
Lolito, oh God. Just isn't really putting in the money according to Reja. That the team needs to get a Champions League bid going and all these kind of stuff. They missed out on the signings that they wanted in the transfer window. They were going for Nilmar from Villarreal. They ended up selling Cisse to Queen's Park Rangers. They didn't get the Honda from CSKA Moscow. So it's not going well for them. The manager probably feels unsupported. And I assume that the owner, who doesn't want to pay for new players, probably doesn't want to pay for a new manager either. So... yeah, that's how it's going.
That whole time I was thinking about what Dwayne was just saying about the falling out between Balotelli and the rest of Manchester City, and thinking about another Seinfeld episode where George leaves things in his girlfriend's apartment so that he has an excuse to go back over there.
Balotelli.
Yeah, there you go. Costanza.
Yeah.
Seinfeld, quality show.
Squiz, what would you like to promote?
That's a hell of a good question, Jamie, slowly thinking about whether or not Dwayne actually did libel anyone before he left. Well, we'll find out. I am promoting the Rochester Lancers of the Major Indoor Soccer League, and the fact that I'm mentioning them shows that this scheme that they've come up with has done its trick. They have extended an olive branch to a player that they would like to bring on board, not a soccer player, former NBA star Allen Iverson. They are offering him $20,000 a game starting pretty soon to come and play for the Rochester Lancers in the Major Indoor Soccer League. And you may think, well, Allen Iverson, he was a star for years. I know that guy. He made all kinds of money. Yeah. What would he possibly need to come to this league for? Yeah, all of that money went in the same direction that MC Hammer's money did. I don't know if it necessarily went to oversized fluffy pants, but
I hope so.
Maybe he will show up wearing those oversized fluffy pants in Rochester, New York. Allen Iverson has had some publicized financial troubles, and this team is now thinking that a la Sporting Kansas City bringing in NFL star Chad Johnson. I'm not going to call him Ocho Cinco.
You don't have to anymore.
Why? Why?
He's changing his name back to Johnson.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
You mean that changing his name to Ocho Cinco wasn't an expression of his deep, heartfelt connection to Spanish culture and to the number 86, it was a cheap publicity stunt?
Yeah, apparently he's getting married and he doesn't want his wife to have to take the stupid last name Ocho Cinco. Or probably she just told him, you're changing the name back.
Yeah, that's probably as good a reason as any. In addition to the fact that it's stupid.
Yes.
Anyway, Allen Iverson, to my knowledge, has no actual soccer playing experience, but the team has said it's okay. He doesn't have to go out and kick the ball. He can be a goalkeeper, which is kind of insulting to goalkeepers. But anyway, the team owner, I believe this is the team owner, team vice president says, I do think with his athletic talent and abilities, he wouldn't embarrass himself. It could be something really unique for our fans.
He wouldn't embarrass himself.
When you as a team are setting your sights on players, not based on how well they can fill the net or fill the stands, but on the premise that they won't embarrass themselves, that takes a lot of moxie, a lot of chutzpah. And for having that chutzpah, I am promoting the folks at the Rochester Lancers.
All right, the Rochester Lancers of an indoor soccer league.
Major indoor soccer league.
It must be major because apparently they've got $20,000 to drop every week on a player who may or may not embarrass himself every time. And a player who, to put it mildly, is a bit of a risk. This is a man who was once charged with incitement to riot. If I'm not incorrect.
Allen Iverson?
Oh, yeah. Incitement to ride. Look it up. Allen Iverson.
Very well.
Yeah.
Was this when he was playing?
An indoor soccer team. Yeah, when he was playing for the Sixers.
I was going to ask if it was when he was in China.
No. I don't think you get out of China if you're charged with incitement to ride there. Where's an indoor soccer team getting $20,000 a week?
Jamie, let's not ask questions. If the owners of a team are saying that they have money for something, we should just trust their financial wisdom.
I assume there's a lot of money in Lansing these days.
There might be, as there's a lot of money in Glasgow for the owners of Rangers.
For ranging.
Yeah. They've shown always financially responsible.
Financial stewardship.
Yes. Jamie?
Yes.
Who or what would you like to relegate?
I'm going to relegate someone who normally you would think of as a nothing but good things, soccer-wise. But this is less, I just mentioned prudence. This is not really prudent in my view. Franz Beckenbauer, one of the legends of the game, has come out and said basically, well, here's the headline. More handshakes needed, says Beckenbauer. And basically,
just in general,
his premise is just like, everything in soccer will be better if everyone's just shaking their hands more.
Oh, him and Sepp Blatter.
Yeah, exactly. Racism, respect for referees, respect for other players, all of this kind of stuff.
Skin infections.
The current lack of rashes running rampant through the league. And this comes a little bit over a week after the biggest controversy of the year was caused by what handshake or the lack thereof. If they didn't do handshakes, then the Luis Suarez Patrice Evra thing would have blown over by now, but it hasn't. So, and Franz Beck, and this is the best part is the end. He uses old man logic. I mean, this is old man logic.
Old man logic.
Yeah, like back in my day, we didn't do anything wrong. We just, you know, the steely glint in a man's eye and a firm handshake was legally binding on pain of death. It's just, it's not practical. And also, he follows it up with, I mean, this is ridiculous. He's the last line of the article, which is, I think, from Reuters. It says, Beckenbauer said the players often missed shaking hands at the end of the game, quote, because they go off to celebrate with their fans or they want to celebrate with their grandmother. What the hell is he talking about?
What?
Yeah, Patrice Evra didn't shake Suarez's hand at the end of the game, not because he was doing a big celebration with the fans and that caused a problem. It was because he was actually running off to go celebrate with his grandmother.
Little known fact, Patrice Evra's grandmother also once charged with incitement to riot. So
other little known fact, Franz Beckenbauer hates grandmothers.
Why would he do that?
I don't know.
Well, he's a legend of the game, so.
I don't know what his Oma did to him. That's German for grandmother.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's very international of you, Jamie.
Look at me. Grant's not even here. He's not here not pronouncing foreign names correctly. And I'm here just throwing German around like it's going out of style.
No, it's pretty much in style.
Yeah, there's a lot of Germans.
Yeah, a lot of Germans. But Grant isn't here because he's over in India, which takes us to my relegation, which is the fact that the much-hyped Premier Soccer League, the Indian Premier League, which was meant to start out this month, and we were hoping while Grant was over there, he might get a chance to take in a game, learn a bit about his adopted new favorite team, Hindustan Aeronautics Limited Sporting Club, perhaps catch up with former Whitecaps coach Tater Torterson, who was scheduled to manage one of these teams. None of this is going to be possible while Grant is there because due to quote, many problems. The league has been delayed for at least a month, and at this point probably won't even end up happening. And this wasn't, you know, this wasn't a complete fly-by-night operation. They had attracted a number of well-known international stars. Fabio Cannavaro was going to play, Hernan Crespo, Robert Pires, Robbie Fowler.
Tony Adams.
I mean, these
was going to be a manager.
These guys were you know, and Teitur Torgersen, of course, were drawn from all corners of the globe to this league to take part. But, you know, because of these, quote, many problems, unfortunately, this league will not take place. It's a blow to international soccer, and it's a blow to Grant's vacation in India because he's not going to have a chance to indulge in some high-level soccer action. He's instead going to have to continue spending $2 paid to a guy to entice a snake out of a basket.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, really.
Maybe that's one of the problems. The snakes got loose. Can't have a soccer.
Those were one of the problems.
Yeah.
There were many problems. That could easily be one of them.
No money, no stadia, plague, running rampant.
I am so sick of these. No, I definitely can't finish that line. Thanks, CRTC. In any event, that is going to bring us to the end of the show, by which I mean Taste the Trivia, the weekly trivia challenge we do, where not only the answers but the questions are also provided by you, the listeners. Last week, the question was, when was the Canadian men's national team's first official international win? The answer was June 14th, 1924, against Australia, with Dickie Staubert scoring the lone goal of the game for the Canadians.
That.
Oh, yeah, it was a great game.
Cracking goal.
Yeah, the pitch was a bit off, but, you know, you do what you can. The winner of the challenge was Dawn Seaburn, who gave us the correct answer. She is the proud owner, or will soon be the proud owner, of a prize courtesy of our friends at Umbro Canada, and she has provided us with the question for this week's Taste of the Trivia, which is, when did Carmelina Moscato earn her first cap for the Canadian senior women's national team? Who were they playing against? And how old was she? Three pieces of information we need there. If you have the correct answer, or if you believe you have the correct answer, head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/somecanadianguys. If you're the first one to put in the correct answer, you will not only be the recipient yourself of an Umbro prize. Umbro. Why do I keep saying Umbro?
I don't know.
A prize from that company that does Canada's stuff, as well as be given the chance to provide a question for next week's Taste the Trivia. Jamie, you're not eligible to enter, unfortunately.
But I love the taste of trivia.
You can taste it as much as you like. You just can't swallow it. Wow.
But that, come on, man. Cripes.
That's a good finish to this show.
You might even actually have your choice of prizes. We have a couple things on offer.
Yeah.
And we will contact the winner and let them know. We just don't have a thorough range of sizes for all of the prizes. So, yeah, you'll get to make your own choice.
Yeah. Do your best. Put in some trivia answers. Have some fun. Next week, we will ideally be returning, assuming that we don't encounter similar scheduling snafus. We are set to bring you a preview of the club season ahead. We are hoping to speak to, planning to speak to, some correspondents in each of the cities, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, and Edmonton, where Canada's Big Four professional clubs play, to give everyone an idea of what to expect in the year ahead. And if you live in one of these cities or if you follow one of these teams, you probably have been keeping track of how your team is doing. But the idea is to give people across the country an idea of how all these teams are fixed to turn out this season. It's a holistic, conciliatory approach, Jamie, don't you think?
I'm doing a holistic arm gesture.
Wonderful. Well, if you like holistic and conciliatory, tune in to next week's show. In the meantime, you can catch up with what we're doing. Jamie, what's going on in your world with Sportsnet and magazines and .cas and all that?
Sportsnet magazine is actually currently working on its MLS preview. It's going to be gangbusters. You should pick it up. It'll be 2 weeks from today it'll come out.
Does that mean that you're currently working on Sportsnet magazine's MLS preview?
Yep.
Okay. Well, good luck with that, Jamie.
All right.
And if you need research, listen closely to next week's... Oh, wait, you'll be here. You'll be asking the questions. We will be back with you next week. Till then, you can check out what I have to write over at CanadianSoccerNews.com. And we had Dwayne Rollins here earlier. You can check him out. Canadian Soccer News. It's called Football 24th Minute on Twitter. I am on Twitter at Daniel Squizzato, DanielSquizzato. Jamie, you've
been... Do you think that helps anybody who's just like, wait, I need to spell that, and they can write that down that quickly?
They can slow this down. In modern technology,
you can do anything.
Yeah, you can do anything.
All right.
Or you could just, you know, Google whatever you like and you'll find something eventually. Jamie?
Yes.
Where can people find you? I know I always phrase this dumbly and you laugh at me. What is your handle on Twitter?
I don't like the term handle. All right. It's @Doyle_Jamie. I didn't know last time. I do now. Doyle underscore Jamie.
D-O-Y-L-E underscore J-A-M-E-I. No, I-E.
Nope, J-A-M-I-E.
Jamie. You're related to Jameer Quay.
Yeah, well, God knows if you spelled your own name right.
Yeah, well, if I can do that, I can do anything, including coming back next week for the next edition of the show. Be sure to listen to us then. Till then, this is, as always, Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer.